Hey everybody, welcome back to the Nintendo Wirecast. I'm here with my good friend, the conquering hero, Amiibo Jason. I'm TJ. Yeah, dude, Nintendo Wire Channel, after 5 long years, we just had the 5-year anniversary, has now reached 100,000 subscribers.
Crazy.
It is crazy.
It's crazy to think about. A couple days ago, I went and took a look at the very first video I ever uploaded. And the very first upload was on December 5th of 2014. And 5 years and one day later, we hit 100,000. Oh, your phone's going off already. Look at you.
It's a celebratory chime in honor of your accomplishment.
That is smooth, TJ. That is smooth. Good for you. So that being said, I mean, it's bizarre because we would have hit it on the 5-year anniversary, but I kid you not, we got a notification from YouTube saying we have to purge some dead accounts from your channel, you know, and that typically happens once or twice a year. And of course they do it when we were at 99,900.
Yeah. And what's also funny about that is they had done it last week? And it took a little off the top, but when we were in the final countdown watch, where it's an exciting milestone, you want to be there when it happens.
Yeah.
Right at the precipice where you're about to go over the edge, they're like, nope, back to another 500 view subscribers you got to make up. So
it could have been worse. So yeah, I take that in stride. I'm happy it happened, though. I got to watch it clock over, which was nice. So I was refreshing and refreshing and refreshing. You might not know this, YouTube changed their API. So there was a site called Social Blade where you could actually watch the counter go in real time. They put the kibosh on that about 2 or 3 months ago. So the only way to watch it is in the creator studio by mashing the refresh button. And I was lucky enough to capture the 100,000, and it was exciting. It really was. But now that we're big shots, what do we do from here?
Yeah, people, I think, have a very differing experience when it comes to YouTube as a creator. The platform has not changed much, I would say, from a viewer standpoint. You still can enjoy all of this content totally for free, generated by users. YouTube has forayed into making their own content. But as a content creator, YouTube does not keep the lights on. You have all kinds of challenges to make content as it is. So yeah. I can only speak from my side of it as a creator on whose content is almost exclusively on the Nintendo Wire channel. And my content is typically pretty high production, and that typically means a lot of time goes into it. So it has to be something that I'm really interested in, something I'm really passionate about. So to me, this is a moral accomplishment, not really not a professional one. Because in the best of cases, the revenue generated from the videos is a small stipend. And in the worst of cases, it doesn't even cover the cost of what it took to create the video in the first place. Yeah. So for me to be able to share something that I'm passionate about, that I really love, like customizing Amiibo or exploring what Amiibo can do in Smash Brothers, playing with my online avatars, Hero TJ, Dark TJ. Like, to me, I enjoy that. And that there are that many people out there who also enjoy it is what keeps me coming back and what keeps me making the content. Custom Conquest recently had the reimagining, and it's not because I really felt like the world needed Custom Conquest. It's because enough people who have followed my content over the years have continued to ask me about it, have continued to inquire about, like, hey, we really liked that show. When is that show coming back? The show doesn't make me money, but the show gives me a lot of affirmation, and it allows me to exercise my artistic impulses, and it allows me to share this niche interest with a bunch of people out there, 100,000 people who also share in that same interest.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the same boat where from time to time, I will have a video that will net me good money. And it's a rarity. It's when I say a rarity, I don't mean like once a month. I mean like once a year will I get something that's like, wow, this is great. I might be able to put some money away and invest it into something. But 9 times out of 10, this is a passion project, Nintendo Wire. The Nintendo Wiretap is not a huge time consumption for me, but it takes a chunk out of my day nearly every day.
Yeah.
And I do it because obviously I like watching it grow. I like sharing the news. And one day I'd like to see it get bigger. But if you are an aspiring YouTuber, just I would say how rare it is for somebody to make it big very quickly and make the big bucks. I think that we are a success story. At 100,000 5 years later, we are above what the odds are to hit 100,000 subscribers.
Absolutely. And some channels will never get there. And what I think, and this is going to be me shouting your praises on this, is you launched this channel based on Amiibo. And Amiibo were a fad. Amiibo were a craze that I think that we can, just generally looking at the state of Amiibo, can see that that fad has passed. Amiibo are still popular and people still enjoy them, but it's not what it was. Amiibo were insanity. And you were on the ground level and you saw an opportunity to be able to invest more deeply in this interest, and it caught fire. So the channel gained a lot of momentum very quickly, but then you hit 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 subscribers, and suddenly Amiibo start to taper off. But you pivoted. You were like, you know what? I love Amiibo. I am the reigning king, Amiibo Jason. But I'm also a collector in the more general sense, and I also love Nintendo. So the time is necessary to pivot this from just being an exclusively Amiibo-centric channel to one that covers more broadly Nintendo in general. And I felt at the time when you were discussing it with me that it was a smart move, and it had a couple different steps to reach its current incarnation as Nintendo Wire. But I felt like every time your instinct to pivot came up, you were right, and you kept this channel alive.
I think we should pivot to a fitness based channel. What are you thinking,
dude? I have been living in nonstop Ring Fit since that.
This is our segue into Ring Fit.
I did.
What level are you?
Okay, I just crossed the 160 mark.
Oh my god, I'm ashamed at my progress.
Yes, but you won't be when you hear why that is. I typically record in the mornings.
Yeah.
Like I'll drop my daughter off at school. I'll come home with my boys, and somewhere in that span of time while she's at school, she's at half days here. It's a little bit different than in America. In Taiwan, your first graders go to school for only 4 hours. Yeah. So somewhere in that time span, I typically get in a 90-minute workout. Sometimes I can stretch it to 2 hours. My boys try to do it with me, but they lose interest. But because I can keep them in the same room as me, they're doing their thing, playing around, and I'm able to keep them from hurting each other, keep them alive, and also exercise. But things changed this last week where I missed my first day ever. And it was, I just had one of those days where I woke up, I hit the ground running, and I didn't stop moving until it had already become the next day. So the whole day, my body was like, I want to find that time to do it, but I just literally never had a free moment to myself. So the next day, I worked out at night instead. Now, when my boys are here and they're all running around, they're putting an automatic limit on how long I can go. So the first night, I was really tired. And I'm like, I don't really think I've got a long workout in me, but I got to get it in because I'm not missing 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
And my intended 35, 45-minute workout turned into a 4.5-hour marathon where I was almost the better part of the night I was up playing it.
And that's impressive.
It just really sucked me in. I kept feeling like, all right, it's time to move on. But if I do one more stage, then I'll be at a good starting point for tomorrow. And I'll do that one more and it'll branch off these paths. I'm like, oh, if I get one more skill point, I can unlock this move that I've been wanting to do for a long time. And it just kept turning into that where it just kept sucking me into more and more. And I'm like, all right, well, tomorrow I'll do a nice light workout. And Sure enough, I put the game in. I want to do a nice short workout. I'm really tired. 4 hours go by.
That's insane.
That happened to me all week. Half of my sleep time, all week long, like five straight days, I've booted up the game with the intention of having a nice, short, little workout. And not once has it been less than 4 hours.
See, I'm impressed with that. I haven't missed a day yet. So today's day 50. I haven't done it yet, but today is day 50. I have an Apple Watch, and I base my workout on when my Apple Watch tells me I hit my move record for the day, which is, I think, 800 calories of essentially exercise per day, which is typically for me about an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours of working out. So an hour to an hour and a half of Ring Fit and 30 minutes of something else. So that's my day. I'm 137, but yesterday after about 55 minutes, I was dying. I was looking at my watch. I'm like, please just tick over and say I'm done. But my longest workout was 2 hours. I think, yeah, right around 2 hours. And that was about it for me. But I am seeing results.
Yeah.
Like, I'm down 12 pounds, awesome. Which is, I'm thrilled at. I'm below what I wanted to be at, which I guess I'm not sure how I feel about that yet. But I'm seeing the definition. I'm seeing the tone and everything. But I'm really pushing it for the next 10 days because 60 days is up in 10 days. I'm going to have my before and after picture.
Yes.
On day 60. So I have to make sure I look my tip top best.
Yeah, man.
But it's exciting. I mean, I mention this every show, and this is in hope that somebody who is tuning into this one might not have heard the shows before. But if you had issues in the past with working out, whether that be motivation or just finding the time or just you hate it, and you like Nintendo, give this game a shot. It is innovative, it is fun, and it is effective. And I really don't think you can ask for much more than that.
I couldn't agree more. And I don't want people to get the false impression that to get great results, you have to be doing these four-hour marathon
workouts. Not
at all. Yeah. You could work out for 20 minutes a day with this thing, and it is going to improve your strength, your flexibility, and your general overall fitness. You don't have to be doing it the way that I'm doing it. I don't know why this I've fallen into this pattern, and I don't.
Because you give everything 200%.
Yeah, that's
you really do.
The problem.
But like I said before, I mean, this is something that Nintendo should be praised to high heaven for. It's absolutely fantastic.
I just can't wait to see where they go from here. Like, are they going to iterate on this?
DLC
is there
or something?
I'm not through the story yet. You're not either.
No, I'm on world. Well, you do everything. I only go through the main quest for the most part, unless I'm broke and need money. I'm on world 14.
I think we might be in the same spot.
I finally got to a point where you don't have to fight the same monsters anymore. You're
yes.
fighting animals.
Okay.
And I was so excited.
Me too. I was blown away. That was last night for me.
Yeah, there was a deer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's a new thing.
Yeah.
I was thrilled.
Same. And that's exactly why it was 4 hours. Because suddenly the game just started introducing all these new things to me. I got some new exercises that I really wanted to try.
Yeah.
And I started getting new enemies that I could face. So I'm like, all right, maybe just one more. I'm like, okay, I'm completing this world.
Yeah.
So
it's fun.
The game loop is there for me. I can see how for most people the story is paper thin. It's just basically shoehorned in. It's very it gives me a lot of sense of adaptation. Like, you'll recognize familiar themes. There's you get a little bit of Wizard of Oz in there. You get a little bit of Greek mythology in there. They're taking bits and pieces of other archetypal stories and just kind of thematically centering different worlds around those. It's not something where, oh, I'm so compelled to see what happens next. Because frankly, I don't care. But what I am really excited about is, oh, I can't wait to see what exercise I get next. I can't wait to see how difficult it is for me to defeat Drago this time.
Yeah.
And things like that that I do find completely fascinating. I still have to say I hate the mountain climber exercise mostly because I love the mountain climber exercise in real life, but I cannot get this game to read it. So I'm doing all sorts of crazy things with my body because sometimes you have to do it. It's not in my repertoire of techniques that I use when I'm fighting in the normal game modes. But sometimes you go into a gym and it says your challenge in this gym is to defeat these five rounds or whatever it is, defeat these monsters using these specific exercises. And anytime one of them is mountain climber, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to score perfectly on every other move because I'm going to have to make up for how bad mountain climber is going to drag down my average, because for some reason, and it doesn't matter how I perform the mountain climber, at least 50% of the time, it's giving me like fives and tens. 100 would be a perfect move. I'm getting like fives and tens. I'm like, oh, this is dragging my average way down. So I like stand up. I'm doing like dancing circus. I'm doing like dancing Russian circus bear acts, trying to get this
thing. Hey, if it works, it works.
Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But that part of the game makes me crazy. I also cannot figure out why in some of the worlds I'm incapable of accessing certain side quests.
Yeah.
And so the game still holds some mystery for me. And because it's not widely discussed online, the information is just not out there. So I can't like look up, hey, how do I do this third quest on World 3? You just don't know. So
yeah,
I'm just playing through it and having fun. And I think it's going to be my most played game on the Switch ever. I mentioned this last time or the time before. This is the first real justification for the Switch to me.
Yeah.
The first game that actually utilizes the Switch specific technology in a way that I find to be meaningful and beneficial. There are other games on the Switch that I love. I think that Breath of the Wild is a phenomenal game. The fact is it's better on Wii U. I played over 100 hours on both. It is a better game on the Wii U. It was optimized for that system, and that's where I think the better experience is. Luigi's Mansion is a phenomenal game. I played it with a GameCube controller. It didn't need to be on the Switch. It could have been on any type of system. Games that were intrinsic to the Switch, like 1-2 Switch, that game is ridiculous. I can't believe that game was even made. I can't believe
it. It was fun. Don't be a hater. I loved it.
I think that that game would have been fun if it was a free packet.
You're
going to tell me like that game has the same value as Breath of the Wild.
I paid $50 for it, so...
The game,
I don't regret it, though. I had fun with it.
It was a glorified tech demo, and I think it is fun. For what it is, it's a bite-sized experience that should introduce you to the different features that the Switch offers. Nintendo has a habit of having a launch title that centers around the console-specific features. They had Wii Sports with the Wii U, Wii Sports with the Wii, which really converted a lot of doubters. Myself included. I'm like, how can I play games with this remote control? Sure enough, it was amazing. And then you have the Wii U gamepad with Nintendo Land. I know a lot of people were not terribly receptive to the two-screen display of the Wii U, but Nintendo Land was a fantastic game that I loved. I loved it so much I bought it twice. And so what is the Wii Sports and the Nintendo Land for the Switch? 1-2 Switch? I don't think so. That was a very...
Yeah, probably not.
But you get other games that utilize the technology like Labo. You can't do Labo on anything else. That's definitely a Switch-specific thing. I definitely see that the appeal to that. I'm not the target audience for that. My kids are too young for it, and my brain doesn't work that way. So it didn't really have I don't enjoy that construction process. But Ring Fit Adventure, I've put in more hours than I can even really count at this point. And it's not only going to be my game of the year personally, I think that it's going to be the game that when my Switch finally burns out, this is the game I'm playing when it happens.
I'm in the same boat with that too. I mean, when I look at a JRPG or any RPGs that I've played, I typically spend about 40 to 50 hours to beat an RPG and I'm done. This one, I'm at 65 hours already, which is crazy to think about. And I'm not even... I don't think I'm quite... I might be right about at the halfway point for the story.
Wow.
I saw people hit like level 215 when they beat the game. So I don't know. It depends on how much of the side quests they were doing. But it's definitely kept my attention, and that's all I can ask for. So it's working. I can't wait to share with you guys my 60-day progress on it. I have 10 days left. We'll see how it goes.
I'm excited for you. I can't wait to see that raging six pack.
Well, I don't know if it's going to quite be raging, but I'll do my best.
So we did also have some awesome news in this past week that I don't know about you, but it caught me by surprise. Nintendo just dropped a random Mario Maker update at a point when you feel like the game is dead in the water. I was done with the game. I played through the story mode and I gave up on the online mode. The online on that game was really disappointing in that you really couldn't play it because it was a freeze fest.
Yeah, it sucked.
there was just no way to do it. So I would play through levels solo because you could do that. But anytime you start trying to use the features that I found to be most enticing about this game over the previous version, Mario Maker for the Wii U, none of those game-specific features really were usable. Yeah. And it really stuck in my craw about not being able to use the amiibo and not being able to access the different skins. But I have to say, after this most recent update, I completely understand why they omitted the amiibo functionality. They've converted me on it. I fully support the abandoning of the amiibo functionality in favor of what they can do now. And the centerpiece of this update was a new item that can only be used in the NES version of Mario, the original Super Mario Brothers, where you can get a Master Sword that transforms Mario into Link. And this is not a cosmetic change. It actually changes gameplay, where Link moves very similarly to how he moves in the only 2D Zelda game, Zelda 2, The Adventures of Link. Although he does still have his sprite from the original Legend of Zelda, he can do his downward thrust. He moves side-scrolling. He can jump. And I love it. He shoots his bow and arrow. He has his bomb. He can dash. I immediately booted it up. I played it with my kids in multiplayer. And so it was me, my daughter, and my son. We were going through levels that people created as three different versions of Link. And it was awesome. It was like playing a side-scrolling Legend of Zelda game.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, just full disclosure. I was hoping tonight I might have the opportunity to try it out. There was this Flash game about 5 years ago, and I think it was called Super Mario Mashup.
I played it and I loved it.
And they had Samus, they had Link, they had Mega Man, and
Simon Belmont.
Simon Belmont was in there, yeah. Yep. And this is very, very reminiscent of that. So it was Mario courses with other all-star characters, kind of like the Super Smash Brothers of side-scrolling platformers.
Yep.
I think Nintendo shut that down pretty quick, but there's definitely inspiration from that project in this. I watched a video today of somebody who did like this bow and arrow specific course that was gorgeous. I knew right off the bat that the moment Link would be in this game in this capacity, people would make things so innovative that I couldn't even think of them.
Yeah.
And we're already getting very, very close to that. In this course, there's this bow and arrow course where Link is using his bow and arrow to solve puzzles, to beat Bowser. And it's everything about it is just everything I wanted from the original Mario Maker with all of the characters they had added. And what I'm hoping is that this is one step in the direction of doing this with Samus.
You
and doing this with Mega Man.
You, me, and everybody else. I think that's exactly where my brain went when I first saw this. Because it's not hard to imagine all of these other characters in this classic Mario mode, because we've seen it. We saw it with the skins from the original Mario Maker from the amiibo. Now, if they're going to go in and take some of their classic heroes and integrate them into this and allow you to use their character-specific moves, I think that would be a way to make Mario Maker just far and away a non-stop DLC machine.
I would pay for it.
I would have paid for Link. I would have paid for Link.
I'm shocked I didn't have to pay for Link.
Same.
There is more content with this character and his capabilities. It unlocks so much potential. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, I think Samus would be the next best case for this. obviously her arm cannon and her morph ball. The morph ball would be great. Puzzles specific to breaking blocks with the bomb and like navigating through courses. That could just be insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, good on Nintendo for doing something like this. I was very, very close to thinking that Nintendo was going to abandon Mario Maker 2. Just leave it where it was, no more updates, and that's it. Because they were super quiet for a couple months after it came out, and there was just no content. So I'm happy to see we're getting stuff like this, and yeah, I hope it just keeps coming.
Link is the centerpiece of this DLC pack, but there are also new enemies added. So you get some familiar faces that you could... I don't remember the name of the guy, but he's a guy who throws stuff at you. Spike.
Spike.
Yeah, you get Spike in there, which is pretty cool. I remember
hating... You get that tall dude that is like broken into four or five pieces.
Pokey?
Pokey. Yeah, it's Pokey. In it.
So it's cool. And people have made a lot of levels already where you're Link versus these guys. And I don't know if they deliberately set it up this way, but Link is really good at fighting those guys because of his enhanced arsenal.
Yeah.
I am appreciative of this update. I think that it is an awesome direction to go with Mario Maker, but I do have a couple gripes.
Uh-oh.
I don't like that Link is a power-up. I wish that when, instead of losing the power-up, I wish he just died. I wish I could just be Link, because what it's forcing creators to do is if they want to have a Zelda-specific level with any sort of challenge, they have to provide you with regular access to this Master Sword item. Because there are a lot of puzzles that are created that Mario has no way of getting through. Like, for example, if they put up a series of bricks, Link's bomb can break these bricks. Mario has no ability whatsoever to be able to destroy blocks from the side. So if you could also put keys and things out of reach that Mario has no way of getting to, but Link can get with his bow and arrow.
Yeah.
So it is I will take it. I appreciate that it's there, and I will take it on Nintendo's terms, but they have to know that this is not the best presentation of this. I hope that this leads to a situation where you can have like Super Nintendo Maker, where they do a more crossover type of situation, like that game that you were talking about before, where you could play through the original Super Mario Brothers as a multitude of different characters, and that really transforms the experience, being able to do that, and the different puzzles that it opens up. The creators online are unbelievable. This game can go on forever without Nintendo having to make a single level. As long as Nintendo keeps adding these tools, people are going to be able to keep exercising their creativity. But it is a little bit obnoxious to have to keep getting that power up, because a lot of these levels are puzzles. And some of the time you have to have this ongoing challenge of how do I get past these enemies. You keep getting hit by various things as you're trying to... unlock what the secret is to get to the next stage. So you have to keep going back and getting this Master Sword power up.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is a little bit of an unnecessary impediment to the experience. It does slow down the process, and it probably slows down the creation process, because in order for people to be able to beat it, you have to create a way in almost every room to access that Master Sword item.
Otherwise, you're just going to have to reset the game.
Otherwise you just reset it, which could also be very obnoxious, because if you have a long stage that lasts 500 seconds or whatever it takes, most of these levels have been very long that I've been playing through, and it's really a fight against the clock. So having to constantly go back and do each little thing, unlock every secret to get every key. I mean, I would consider myself a fairly impatient gamer. I got a busy life. I want to get through what I want to do, and I don't want to have to. I don't have time to keep redoing the same thing over and over again. So I like to start relatively close to where I failed, so that I can just get past that and move on with life. I don't want to belabor the point too much, but I wish that there was a way to just be Link. I know another criticism that other people had is that the Master Sword is limited to the Super Mario Brothers mode, so you can't get in any of the other ones. It doesn't bother me too much, but what it really has, it's made my imagination run wild with this, because I've long wanted a side-scrolling Legend of Zelda game. We obviously had a game that was like 90% side-scroller with Zelda 2, but the game was made 30 years ago, and people are not especially fond of that one. It's widely considered to be the black sheep of the Nintendo series. The best example we have of a side-scrolling Link, in my opinion, there's a little bit of it in Link's Awakening, but the best version is Smash Brothers. Link controls phenomenally in 2D in Super Smash Brothers. He has since the 64, and I love the way that he controls in the most recent version. I want a side-scrolling game of Legend of Zelda where I can control Link like that, because I think it would be super awesome. And we haven't seen something like that for 30 years. And this game kind of reawakened my personal desire for that game that just, it doesn't exist. I don't know if it will ever exist, but I want it even more now.
I mean, I would be thrilled to see a Zelda maker. I would have liked to see some Zelda-specific enemies, like throw some like-likes in there, maybe have an alternate skin for Bowser to be Ganon, which I feel like would work pretty well. Even cosmetically, I would have been happy with that. But overall, I mean, I got to give Nintendo credit for this one. A free update that adds an entirely new mechanic. So I think this is just opening the door for me for what they could do with like a Zelda Dungeon Maker. So here's hoping one day it could happen.
Absolutely.
The same thing. I've mentioned this with Breath of the Wild. I would have killed for an update that let me build a shrine, like do a shrine puzzle maker, and I would be set forever. Those shrines were, especially the puzzle shrines, were the best part of the game for me. I loved just thinking outside of the box, and I've played enough of the game Portal to know that if you give creators tools to make some cool things, they're going to make some things that you would not expect. So, but either way, Nintendo, amazing job. I can't wait to try it out. So hopefully by the next podcast, I'll have an update for you on how that went. Even though by the next podcast, the Game Awards are going to be over, which is going to be a big topic.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that quite a bit, I imagine.
Before we move on to that, did you have any closing thoughts on this one?
I don't want to end this on a sour note.
Oh, but, no.
But I, for the first time, played the Maker aspect of Mario Maker.
Yeah.
And I was immediately turned off. I was so impressed with the Mario Maker on Wii U and how they found a way to gamify the creation process. And it was fun and charming and funny to make levels and introduce all these characters. And I don't know what it is, but I immediately understood what it took to create a level on the Wii U. I didn't read any instructions. I didn't take any tutorials. I just started poking around, picking pieces with my stylus, moving them onto the gamepad and building stuff. It was simple. What I saw in my mind, I immediately recreated in game assets. In about 15 minutes and a tutorial and asking my daughter, I couldn't figure out it. I couldn't figure out how to use.
Are you at that point in your life where you have to ask your kids for help
all the time? Well, I'm completely humbled about it now because I since living in Taiwan, I'm asking my children for help all the time because I have no language and they have some language. So I'm constantly saying, "What did that person say? What does that say? Can you read that to me?" And I'm depending on them heavily, which I think is giving them a big sense of empowerment, and it's humbling me so that I'm seeing on a regular basis that there are stuff my kids know that I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes with video games, things come more natural to them. And because they don't have, I thought, am I having a problem with this because I already understood how the Wii U version worked and that I'm slow to change? I'm like, no, that's not it, because I didn't have any experience with the Wii U one, and I just instantly started doing it. And this one, even with a deliberate intention, I can't figure it out. I still can't even figure out how to do it. There are certain items. I can't even find the Master Sword. I don't even know where they put it. So I'm like, all right, enough of this. I've wasted 20 minutes of my time. I'm just going to go play other people's levels.
Yeah. And I think it took me a lot of time to do it, to figure it out when I first started creating. I have like 4 or 5 courses uploaded right now on Mario Maker 2. My daughter has uploaded one too. I will give it to you. I struggled to find a lot of the menus. I had no idea where certain items were. And then I'm like, oh, you do this, and then this, and then this. I think the longer you do it, the better you get. But the Wii U is far superior for creating.
Yeah.
And obviously, touchscreen technology got better with, and I can't remember the name of the touch technology that you need, like your finger. You need something that conducts electricity to close the circuit and touch the screen. But using a stylus, a traditional stylus, not like the ones that came out for Mario Maker, it's just a better experience. I've had no issues with those. I've had issues in Mario Maker 2 with the stylus where I touched one area and it thinks I touched another area, and it's not as fine-tuned. Mm. So I will say that from a creation standpoint, it was much better on Mario Maker 1.
Yeah.
I would like to see them create like a PC suite, like give me an application on my computer where I can create the course on there and then move it over to the Switch.
I know. I was even thinking if you released a Wii U gamepad specifically for Mario Maker, I would buy that. Yeah. I would buy it, even if it's just the device. Or, you know what? I don't know how hard this is to do, but if I can use a Switch Lite as my interface for Mario Maker while I'm playing it on my Switch, if there's some way to connect them in that way so that it can be the controller. I know they did something with the 3DS and the Wii U so that you could use that as a controller for Smash Brothers. Can I somehow use an additional Switch as a controller for my primary Switch?
And I then feel like they can do that. And that would be a good way to spend.
They'd sell me one. That's the right now. There's no way I can see it working into my life with my completely digital collection. But if I could use it as an interface for games like Mario Maker and have dual screen interface for games where it made sense,
like Zelda.
Inventory. If I could have it, well, I don't know if I could play Zelda with that horrible controller. No. I could. That would work. Actually, that would be phenomenal. And then give me the version of Breath of the Wild that I was always meant to have with my map on the second screen.
Maybe for Breath of the Wild 2. Maybe. This is something that I could see Nintendo dropping a bomb at E3. Like, just this would be that kind of announcement where it would be like, we download this app and you can do this. I can't imagine it would be overly taxing for Nintendo to make that happen. I'm not sure from a processing power standpoint, like what it would take to broadcast the screen over to that. I know the Wii U did it very differently in comparison to, they had special technology built into the Wii U and the gamepad to do that transmission. Yeah. So I'm not sure if the Switch is equipped for that.
Yeah.
But if they could do it with the 3DS and the Wii U, I feel like they could do it with the Switch and the Switch Lite.
It certainly would be an expensive controller. I would save up my money and I would drop $200 to have an awesome controller that allowed me unique interface with these games. I could definitely see the value of that. That's more valuable to me than having an additional Switch available.
Yeah. Who knows? Might happen one day.
All right. That's all I'm going to say about Mario Maker 2.
We'll move on real quick to the Game Awards. And this is going to kind of move us into Super Smash Brothers again anyway. So the Game Awards are, what day are they coming? Is it the 10th?
The 12th.
The 12th. Okay. Let me see. I'm sure you're right.
Confirm me.
Yeah. December 12th, 2019, 7:30 p.m. 6 days from now, Thursday night of next week, which is exciting as heck. Last year, we got the bombshell of Joker literally stealing the show and stealing an invite to Smash Ultimate.
Classic.
This year, I feel like Nintendo is going to do something similar. I would imagine that the Game Awards being used to show Fighter 1 and Fighter 5, the first and the last fighter in the Fighter Pass.
I think it's poetic.
I think so too.
But Nintendo also is in the business of defying expectations, especially where Smash Brothers is concerned. So I have two thoughts.
Yeah.
One, Smash has no new announcements whatsoever. I don't think that that's going to be the case because it's represented in a couple categories and it has the potential to win in those categories. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they didn't try to surprise, because the Joker was so stunning and so unexpected that recreating that is expected. Where if they just say, hey, and now we want to talk to you about the Final Fighter Pass, they just low-key drop it. That wouldn't surprise me. That would surprise me less than if they tried to find a way to create something super over the top for this
If it's third party, which I think we're all in agreement, that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
The Game Awards is so big now. This is the fourth or fifth year. I can't remember. But it is so big with so many different kinds of gamers. I would imagine that if this is a third party announcement, that third party would use the Game Awards to hype this up to non Nintendo fanboys.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So if it is a third party that's big enough, let's say it's Doomguy, which I have no idea if that's going to be the case or not. I know there's... What are the other rumors at this point? There was Mallow from Mario RPG.
Ryu Hayabusa from Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah. Oh, Crash Bandicoot's been on that list for a while. Even though, if I had to guess, he would be not announced. I have a feeling it's going to be a little bit more niche than anything else, but I could be wrong. But I could imagine they would use this as an opportunity to sound the alarm to people that aren't Nintendo Direct fanboys like you and I are.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So who knows? I'm excited to see what they're going to do. I do think, besides that, we're going to get a Bayonetta 3 announcement. There was a leak about 4 or 5 days ago, and the leak was courtesy of Microsoft. Thank you, Microsoft.
I know that you're a big Bayonetta fan. Yeah. Has, like, I feel like Bayonetta 3 has already been announced at 2 Game Awards already.
We got 2 years ago, we got the teaser for Bayonetta 3. I think they mentioned something last year that it's still in development, but that was it. We got nothing else. But the leak from Microsoft was they are remastering Bayonetta 1 in 4K for the Xbox One. It could be a sign, and that it's never been officially announced since the leak. So the Game Awards makes sense. And if Platinum Games is going on a Bayonetta announcement kick, it would make sense for them to do the same thing, you know, announce maybe that and then say, here's a trailer for Bayonetta 3. I would love to see that. Besides that, I'm not sure what Nintendo would have to offer. I don't think we're ever going to get a moment like we got. Was it last year when all three studio heads got on stage?
We definitely won't, because that was a unique time in gaming history where the figureheads had attained celebrity status. Yeah. And that's not common. Like, how often do you know the names of the CEOs of companies or the presidents of companies? Almost never. Like, people enjoy the products, but it's a rare case where you know by name not only the president of the company, but you know their two closest competitors' names, and that they're recognizable figures and personalities that you connect closely with the experience of those games. And there are a lot of people at Nintendo that I know that whose personalities I enjoy, but Reggie was in a class all his own.
I mean, Doug Bowser's great, but
he's great.
He doesn't have the presence that Reggie had.
He's got the name. Like, his name is big. I like Doug Bowser, and I think he's going to do a lot of things, good things for Nintendo moving forward. But it took Reggie a long time to build that reputation and that rapport and all of those sound bites that we got over his tenure at Nintendo, that for that moment to happen, it's not like it happened. It would have been less meaningful, I think, if it was Doug Bowser, because he represents a changing guard. Yeah. And so it would have felt like, well, now that Reggie's gone, Nintendo can play nice with these other companies. Whereby Reggie being there, it's like, after all of these times, these men, these companies, these consoles, these fans have created a console war. And now we're coming together in mutual appreciation for the love of gaming. It was meaningful. I actually felt emotionally impacted by it. I'm like, wow, this is historic. And I couldn't believe that the Game Awards put that together. I just sat there with my mouth shut. I watched it with my brother, who is a bigger gamer than I am. And both of us were just like, flabbergasted.
It's a great show. It really is. I mean, the Game Awards exceeded my expectations. I remember the first year it was on, and I expected very little from the Game Awards. If I remember correctly, the very first Game Awards, was that when we got one of our first looks at Breath of the Wild?
I don't know if it was the first Game Awards, but I do know that our first look at Breath of the Wild gameplay was a Game Award.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one it was, but I could have sworn it was the Game Awards, unless it was like...
It was the Game Awards, but I'm not sure what Game Awards it was. But it was definitely the Game Awards. It was Awanuma and Miyamoto sitting on the screen, and they were looking at the monitor, and it was the horse running between the trees, and they said that line, real horses, you don't have to control the horse, because real horses don't run into trees very often. And...
which is true.
Yeah. As a person who has rode horses, I'm like, you know what? That's very true. So I'm curious if we're going to see any kind of Breath of the Wild 2 announcements. I'm less – I love Smash. Smash is my top game for me. I get more excited about Smash than any other game except Zelda. So that's where I'm really curious, because we also had a bomb drop a couple years ago with the the Ballad – what's it called? Help me out here.
Link's Awakening?
It was – Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Cadence of Hyrule?
No, it was Breath of the Wild, but it was the DLC pack.
Oh, yeah, DLC pack too.
Something Ballad. The name of it. I keep wanting to say Ballad of the Windfish. Champion's Ballad, thank you. Link's Awakening was killing me there because I kept thinking Ballad of the Windfish.
Yeah.
But Champion's Ballad, where they showed you this sweet trailer, and I was like, oh, yeah, finally, after all this time. They had a few months earlier released the first DLC.
Yeah.
With the Master Quest that was announced at E3. So then at Game Awards, they're announcing the final story-driven DLC pack. And then they're like, and it's available now. I was like, whoa! These are my plans for the night!
Yeah.
Stop everything! Close the presses! I am playing this game through the night. Ponyo, crack me open an energy drink. This is happening now. And it was such a monumental bomb that I just created the entire atmosphere for myself. I got my chair, I got my game, I dimmed the lights, and I played it all night long until I passed out, until I couldn't do it anymore. That was a big announcement to me. Are they going to do something on that level with Breath of the Wild 2, or is the game not ready?
Even if it's not, here's the thing. It's running on the same engine, presumably, as Breath of the Wild 1. And that was the biggest struggle they had, was getting that engine up and running based on the interviews that I've read.
Yeah.
The changes they went from making those. And I know game development is very different now than it was in 1998. But I kind of see Breath of the Wild 2 as a spiritual successor to Majora's Mask.
Uh-huh. Where
you're using the assets, you're using the same engine, and you're building something new.
Yeah.
So from is it done standpoint, I would say that it's... they could get it to a point where they could show us something.
That's
a trailer, anything. I take a look back at the original Breath of the Wild trailers that we saw and how radically different it looks in comparison to what the final product was. The design for Link, I remember in the very first trailer when he was on the horse and fighting the Guardian.
Yeah.
I mean, even then it looked so drastically different from what we got, even though, the pieces were still there. But yeah, I think for Breath of the Wild 2, they could whip something up if they wanted to. But do they want to save that for a Nintendo-specific event, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, that is a good question, because Smash is going to be big. We already know it's going to be big, and we know that there's going to be another character announcement. Do they want to bombard us with big news? Do they want to compete with themselves in the news cycle? More Breath of the Wild 2 information, and also this is your final Smash DLC character.
I feel like we're getting one. We're going to get one. And if it were my money, they would use the platform of the Game Awards with a huge variety of gamers. And Smash seems to be the one Nintendo franchise that I think most gamers can agree, PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, that this is a fantastic product.
Yeah, you're right.
I feel like they would use it for Smash, but I could be wrong.
No, you know what? I was leaning a little bit away from it because of what a great job they've done trying to preserve that sense of wonder and surprise. But I think you're probably right on the money here. You've kind of converted me. It would now be unlikely that they would miss this opportunity to convert a lot of people who've held out this long. It's the 1 year anniversary of Smash Brothers. The game came out a year ago and they said, hey, guess what? You're going to get five characters and they're not going to be what you expect. Well, they've delivered on that promise so far. There are four characters and none of them were expected.
Banjo. I wanted Banjo from day one.
Yeah. Yeah, he was somebody that people wanted. But
to
imagine all of the legal loopholes that people had to jump through for this character, he's a phenomenal feat to get that character into this. And even more to the point, from a dead franchise that there's been no action on. So Nintendo is not going to sell Banjo games off of this. In fact, if they create a buzz about Banjo, they're driving customers to their competitors. So Banjo is there purely because Nintendo wants to please the fans. I'm sure that's it. And they want to sell these packages. I'm sure Nintendo's making money off of this. I'm sure that Banjo has moved a whole lot of DLC units, no question.
Yeah.
So they have their own financial incentive there too. But there, it's obviously a more layered issue if you can also sell it with a game. You put Breath of the Wild duds, that's going to move some Breath of the Wild units. But not that anyone hasn't bought that game, but you get the point. So releasing a character that has representation on a Nintendo console increases the odds that people are going to explore other ways in which they can play that character.
Yeah.
But because they're all third party, what better place than when all gamers are gathered together in the spirit of gaming to announce who this final character is going to be?
We have very little time to wait. I feel like we have to do our next podcast on a Friday too. So we have time to talk about everything they're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I am. The Game Awards is, when I first heard they were making it, I was on the fence. I thought maybe it was kind of cringy to a certain degree, but now I love everything the Game Awards stands for. I mean, 9 out of the 10 announcements I don't care about.
Yeah.
But it's the anticipation, it's the energy, everything about it. Last year, Nintendo Wire was invited to the Game Awards and we covered it. Like, it was an exciting time. So I'm curious to see what's going
to
happen this year.
To their credit, it's just like all gaming, the gaming media, it's evolving. And the first few Game Awards were cringy, but people could see what it could be. And I feel like each one's gotten a little bit better. There were one Game Awards I saw where the music was so poorly chosen that I had to turn it off. I actually couldn't watch it because of how bad the musical guests that they had were. But the last one, I sat there through the entire thing. I was entertained the entire time.
Yeah.
Not every announcement was for me, but their world premieres were cool. It was cool seeing all the different stuff that was happening in parts of the game, sectors of the gaming sphere that I'm not a part of.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, along with E3, this is the time when I take off my Nintendo hat and I look around and see what else is out there. Because I'm not going to play any of it. There's just not time. I'm not a Nintendo elitist. People might call me a Nintendo fanboy. But it's really just that time is a limited thing. I can't. Yeah. And money. If I'm going to invest my time and I'm going to invest my resources into a product, all my discretionary spending is going to go to what is the most meaningful to me. And I just have the longest relationship with Nintendo. And I can't imagine not being able to enjoy Nintendo's exclusively licensed character games like Mario and Zelda and that whole host of Smash Brother characters, basically.
I don't know. I'm going to be dusting off my PS4 in March for Final Fantasy VII. I cannot wait for that.
Why don't you just play it on Switch?
I mean, I have the Twin Pack right here imported from Japan, which is fantastic. And I did play it on Switch, by the way, and I beat it on Switch. So
I mean,
but
the
I
new
cannot
one.
Wait for this remake.
Why
I cannot
you, why
wait.
Why don't you just play the remake on the Switch?
If they made it, I would. If they made it, I would play it on it for the second time. But this is one of the few games where I want to play it in 4K HDR. I want it in the highest fidelity it is possible to play it in.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I'm anti-graphics at this point. Nintendo has proven to me time and time again that graphics don't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, but frame rate's a big deal.
Frame rate does, absolutely. I think a lot of developers get overzealous with what they want to put on the Switch, and they need to accept the Switch's hardware limitations to a certain degree. I'm happy that we have games like Doom and Wolfenstein and a plethora of other 3D games that you never would imagine be on the Switch, but some of them run so poorly that I don't know if it's worth it. Doom is not that. Doom runs great. But like I said before, this is the one thing I'm going to stick my PS4 nose in the air and just say, I need to play this in 4K. HDR, 60 frames a second, like in front of a giant TV. Like, this is the one game in a generation I need that.
You've earned that, man. What you're describing is how I felt about Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And I was snappy about it. I was like, this game was made for the Wii U, and it's going to be better for the Wii U. And I played through the game about 8 times. And
hey, at least they released it on the Wii U.
They could not. You know what? I guess they could have, but I think it would have been really...
Even though they neutered it. They really did.
Yeah, they did neuter it, unfortunately. I still dream sometimes about what that game could have been with a touchscreen interface as part of the game. But not to be too reductive, I could see how this game has influenced you since you first played the original Final Fantasy VII, so you want to enjoy it in the best possible way. And
I played it at E3 this year, and I hate to say this because this is a Nintendo podcast, but that was my most enjoyed game at E3 by far, like by a margin that I can't even tell you.
Now, am I correct that this game has done away with the turn-based aspect and turned this into an action game?
No, it's a combination. You can play it both ways.
What?
So you can play it turn-based, and the action stops, and you can select your thing and play it that way, or you can play it more action. I think there was an interview with Nomura, the guy who does the whole thing. He's the director of the project, and he said if you want to play the game completely turn-based, you can do so.
But can you play the game completely not turn-based?
I believe so, yes.
What?
What I played was kind of a hybrid where you can move around, you could do anything you wanted, but then if you went into your menu system in real time, the action would freeze and you could pick what you wanted to do, fireball or whatever materia you wanted to use or a summon, and activate that without needing to really have to do it quickly.
But could I run around and just whack stuff with my Buster Sword? And
yeah, I mean, there's moments though you're gonna need to switch things up, and that's when I think the action's going to pause. I would watch. There's a couple videos where people kind of show you the difference between the two modes. There's hours and hours and hours of gameplay footage out there from like the first hour of the game. So yeah, you can play it either way you want.
That is interesting. I'll have to do a little bit more.
We'll talk
that.
About this next on the PlayStation Wirecast.
Yeah, you're gonna need a new co-host on that. My only
before we go, we have to talk about Ori and the Pocket. Not, I wanted to say Conker's Pocket Tales, but it's definitely not Conker.
Yes, it is Conker's Pocket Tale. No, new Super Lucky's Tale, and
because
Ori
you wanted to talk about it now for like two weeks, and we've run out of time for both of them.
For new Super Lucky's Tale, it's a good game.
Yeah.
It's a game that my kids really enjoy. I think that the load times are really, really bad. I'm gonna get the bad stuff out in the front. The game takes forever to load, and I don't understand why. Because the graphics are not really pushing the system. I don't know how big the game is. I don't know how long it is. But it's really fun to control. The game transitions between a 3D hub world and also a 2D side-scrolling world flawlessly, where you control exactly how you would expect, almost to the point where you don't even notice that your perspective is shifted. And that aspect of the game I think is super fun, and I would really like to explore more. But I've had to stop playing it, and it's because of an issue that I've never encountered with a game before. I've played a lot of games, particularly on Nintendo systems, where the characters speak in a made-up language, like Animalese in Animal Crossing, and the gibberish that the Inklings talk in Splatoon. And I love it. Like listening, when I first heard Animalese and all the animal villagers were like, I'm like, that's funny. They even gave you a few different modes. Like you could have them be little beeps or something else. I'm like, no, I want to hear that Animalese. I love that. Now they have something like that in Super Lucky's Tale, but everything is voice acted. But when you're playing the game, they're all talking in a made-up language, but you have the text appearing on the bottom that you have to read. The problem that I'm having is their made-up language are real words juxtaposed into different positions. So it's gibberish what they're saying, but because they're real words, I can't read it.
Oh my God.
I'm trying to read what they're saying.
Yeah.
But because they're saying different words, like let's say the line is, "You'll never stop me. I'm the ultimate cat ninja." The line is something like, "Baidu go now if I owe." So like, no, I can't do that. That it sounds like a random string of words put together. Yeah. That for some reason my brain can't hear the wrong word and read what the right word is at the same time, to the point where I'm like, all right, I don't know how important it is to see the text in this game, but I'm skipping through it because this is really, really obnoxious to me.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the text was a little too important because I could run around, but I don't really know what the objective is.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother my kids, but it makes me crazy. So
okay, I plan on picking this game up when I have time to play a game. A different game. I love platformers. You know this. So I will let you know how I feel about because that makes me kind of want to play this game even more.
I tried to find if there was a way to disable it.
Yeah.
And there are options to minimize, to completely drop the sound effects and completely drop the music. But I didn't see any option to drop down the voice acting. So I think unfortunately, the really long load times and the really difficult to handle made up language is enough to push me away. But
has anybody mentioned this besides you?
I've never heard it, but it's a shame because I really think the game is well put together and it's fun to control. And he has a cool moveset that is both reminiscent of games that I've played previously and also combined in such a way that it's a new experience. So you get to double jump, you get to dig under the ground and run around. It's a lot of fun, but I'm in that spot where I'm like, is it worth the punishment of these other two factors? And I think, unfortunately, I'm on the underside of it.
All right.
The other game that I play, but at the same time, I wouldn't not recommend the game. I'd say, hey, give it a try. If these things don't bother you, then there's a good game here. The other game I played is Ori and the Blind Forest. I know this game has been out for a while, but it was recently ported to the Switch.
Yeah.
And I was hesitant to get it because I'm not a Metroidvania-style player.
Sure.
But I loved Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight is the game that on my Switch is third behind Breath of the Wild and Smash Brothers for the most hours that I've logged. They're all going to be dwarfed by Ring Fit Adventure soon, but As it stands, Hollow Knight got a ton of game time for me. I loved the world. I loved the atmosphere. I loved how fun and easy it was to control the character. I didn't mind that I got lost. The game, the in-game solutions that they had for being lost were enough for me to reconcile that issue. Ori and the Blind Forest hits the ground running. It doesn't pull any punches. It forces you to get good fast. And then my number one thing about the game that kept me playing is that when you die, you start almost immediately where you died. You have the ability to play this risk and reward gamble where you can save it anywhere that you want. So when you die, you'll start immediately there. However, it's at a cost of resources. So maybe you need those resources to do something else. You want to save them. You don't want to waste it on a save, but you then can decide, hey, this is a really difficult platforming sequence. This is going to take me 100 tries. I'm going to save right here. When all is said and done, I beat the game really fast. I marathoned it over a couple nights. It's not a long game. I think I spent maybe 16 hours or so. I beat maybe 87% of it. And it just kept roping me in. The game was so good. And you can play it in, as I found, a lot of different orders. I did not have the dash at all throughout the game. I never got there. And then my daughter has the dash within an hour of playing the game. I'm like, what? I could have had that all this time, but I didn't. It just happened to be in a region I didn't explore. So I went back and I played even more, and I realized there was a whole section of the game that I didn't even see, and I had beaten it. And I died, because the game keeps track of your deaths, something like 800, 900 times, almost 1,000 times I died playing the game. But the way that I approached it was, I'm going to die, and then I'm going to learn. And so I'll play through this. It reminded me of Battletoads, the third level, where you basically have to memorize where all of those rocks are appearing in your little pod racer or whatever the battle for the classic NES players are. It's such an impossible arrangement of rocks that you have to dodge. The only way to beat it is to memorize it, and the only way to memorize it is to die a million times.
Yeah.
So this game was like that, except much more forgiving in the sense that you have an infinite number of tries and you can start right where it happened. So I got very, very good at a lot of these sequences that force a very high level of gameplay because they let me practice it a lot without having to start back over. If I had to start at the beginning of certain things, I'd have to tap out because I just wouldn't have the time. But it allowed me to get good and really feel accomplished in the game and experience a game that was shockingly moving.
Yeah.
An unbelievable story. And I think as a parent, it hits home even more, and things that you thought you knew about the game are kind of turned on its head. The story is light, kind of like Hollow Knight, where they give you this immense world, an atmosphere that really sucks you in, and they let you assign a lot of your own meaning to it. But I would say it has more story than Hollow Knight does. I had to look it up afterwards and see how other people were interpreting some of the things just because that's how much it stuck with me. And it really stuck with me for a few days. And I remember telling the story to my wife and recounting it to her. And she was emotionally moved by just my brief description of what the game was about. And then she wanted to see it. So I beat the ending again so that she could watch. And I can't recommend the game enough. I liked it so much that I wanted to go back and see if maybe now that I've gotten through two of the bigger Metroidvania-style games with Hollow Knight and Ori and the Blind Forest, if I could play Super Metroid, which is hailed as one of the greatest Metroid games in the series.
Yeah.
And also the inspiration that these types of games were born of. And so 2 days ago, I played it on the SNES Switch Online service.
Yeah.
And I had the exact same experience that I had with the first Metroid. 20 minutes of wandering around and not being able to figure out what to do and getting lost and stuck and getting bored and turning it off.
It's different to the fact where games like Hollow Knight and obviously this one, even though I haven't played it, they can grip you more with the emotions and the music and the storytelling. And it's easier to find your way out of those experiences. With Hollow Knight, I'm not the biggest Metroidvania fan. Even though I love Metroid, I played Super Metroid, beat it all the way through. I played everything in it. But with Hollow Knight, there was moments where the music and the environments are just so gorgeous and good. I never cared that I got lost. And I think modern games have that advantage where older games like Metroid, where it was very new for its time, like this very alien-esque feel where you're trapped in these corridors and every room looks like every other room and not necessarily every other room. But I don't think it had the benefit that a lot of these newer indie games do when it comes to just pure storytelling, visuals, and music. Do you think that had anything to do with like your enjoyment of Ori? Because Ori is a gorgeous game.
I hear what you're saying, and I think there may be something to that in the more general sense, but I don't think that impeded this experience because I was actually blown away by the music and the presentation of I actually don't think I've ever played a game like this before where I've always loved Metroid music, so I'm familiar with it because I hear it in Smash Brothers. And that it opening up with that do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I was like, oh, yeah. All right, I'm in I'm in for this. Maybe I will like this game. And so then you start exploring this corridor. This isn't too much of a spoiler. It's the opening sequence of a 20-year-old game, maybe older. And within a minute, I'm fighting an impossible boss. I'm like, what? Wait, what's going on? This is – and then all of a sudden – I'm in an exploding environment and I need to escape and I see this clock and I'm like, wait, I don't know how to control this well enough. This, what do I do? Where do I go? And I'm just like, do I backtrack? So I'm fleeing this thing. I was excited. I was alarmed and I made it out just in time. And then you watch everything explode. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I have never had a game start off like this. This is amazing. And then they put me into this environment where there's really no arrows pointing you in any one direction, but there are very limited directions that you can move just because you're barred by doors and other things like that. And just the shape of the path that you can go, you're basically descending. So I followed the only path that I could go. And then I unlocked the morph ball. There was my problem. I got the morph ball. I can see that I can't get out of this little area, this like tiny little screen, without activating the morph ball, and I could not figure out how to activate the morph ball. I did. I'm trying every single button combination on this controller, and then
isn't it down twice?
Yeah, yeah. And then I turned off the game. The next day, I'm like, I'm gonna figure this out. I know I have to be able to use the morph ball. So I'm going between the menu, and I noticed that on the menu, if you click the morph ball, it changes it like pink, yellow. So I'm like, wait, is one on, one off? What am I actually doing here? And I couldn't tell what I was doing. So like, maybe I'm deactivating it. Maybe I have to have it this way. So I'm pressing every single button, and none of them seem to be doing it. Finally, I looked it up online on YouTube. I'm like, all right, let me see a playthrough of this. And sure enough, within seconds, the guy morph balls out. I'm like, okay. So my instinct of what I needed to do was correct, but I didn't do it correctly. So let me just try everything. And eventually I hit down twice, and I was like, okay, I'm out. All right, you know, maybe I can play it now. Then the next thing, I unlock these like 5 missiles.
Yeah.
And I get to a pink door. I can't figure out how to get through this pink door. So I shoot it with a missile. Doesn't open it. So I walk around, I shoot off another missile or two, and then I go back and I'm like, there's gotta be something with this door. It's the only way to go. I've explored everything. I've just wasted 20 minutes. Yeah. And so I unload my last few missiles on this door. Still didn't open. So like, all right, back to the YouTube thing. So I look at YouTube, and this guy goes right to the door, shoots it with 5 missiles, and activates the door. I'm like, 5. What? What? And I'm like, how do I even get those missiles now? So I went back to the place where I originally got those missiles. They're not there anymore because I already got them. So now I don't know. I'm at a point now where I have a pink door that I know I need to hit with 5 missiles to get past, but I don't know where I can access 5 missiles. Everything so far in the game has been a really obnoxious process. So I don't really think I can play it for that reason, because my instincts are right. I'm like, okay, I know I need to morph ball out here. Okay, I know I need to use these missiles on this door here. So once I try the missile on the door and it doesn't work, I accept that the missile's not the solution and I move on. So to me, that is a really big problem. I don't know if maybe this was handled in a manual at some point, or if you just had to trial and error it, or if you had to use schoolyard talk to resolve these with friends.
Back in the good old days.
Back in the good old days. I have YouTube that I can check to. But if I just wanted to watch a playthrough of the game, I'd watch a playthrough of the game. I want to play it. I want to have fun doing it. And I don't really think that this game is going to do that for me, unfortunately.
All right. You gave it a shot. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to hear that Ori sounds amazing. I'm bumping that up on my list. It sounds like it's a good game I could actually play with my daughter.
My daughter loves it too. Yeah, it's fun.
So I'm bumping that up the list because we beat Luigi's Mansion, so we do need a new game for sure. So I'll give it a shot.
Sounds good, man.
I can't wait. I'm glad we finally got to talk about it.
Yeah, we'll cross those off the list.
All right, it is getting late here. I still have to do Ring Fit. So, TJ, where can we find more information on you?
We've got a new episode of Custom Conquest out on the now 100,000 subscriber Nintendo Wire channel. Give that one a watch. It's a classic Mario enemy stacked Mario Odyssey style. So give that a watch. And then you can also follow me on social media at Custom Conquest on Twitter.
Awesome. And then for me, if you're curious about my personal Twitter account, that is at AmiiboJason. I'm doing a lot of game collecting right now. I'm nearly completed with my Nintendo 64 collection.
Woohoo!
I have 6 games left to complete the set. So nice. I'm pretty excited to get that done. So if you want to follow my adventures hunting for rare vintage video games, you can find that at AmiiboJason. Obviously, I am the editor-in-chief of NintendoWire.com. That's just NintendoWire.com. We're on Twitter at NinWire. We're at Amiibo News. And of course, on YouTube, which you just mentioned, we hit 100,000. I can't be happier. I mean, it's absolutely insane. But thank you for everybody for tuning in. And if you are on our YouTube channel, thank you for subscribing. I mean, it's been a crazy couple of years, so I can't wait to see what comes next. All right.
Second that.
Let's wrap it up, and I'll say what I always say. Until next time, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.
All right.